You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Political cartoons often bring the real issues of a campaign into sharper focus, but do they actually play a role in the national political discussion, or should their goal be to simply provide some comic relief at a time when it's often difficult to find much to laugh about? Robert Mankoff, the cartoon editor of The New Yorker, joins me now to talk about political cartoons, and you can find a slideshow of some of his favorite political cartoons from The New Yorker on our show page at WNYC.org. Hi, Bob.
I am really pleased to be here, and
you're one of my oldest guests. I'm
often someone's oldest friend too.
But you started appearing on the show not long after I took over as host.
Right, I think.
Do you remember that? 23 years ago.
Me and Matt Graney were on the show, and look, my career has rocketed, and where is he now?
That was very weird. At the end of that interview I did with Matt Graney, I asked him, "So what's next?" And he said, "Well, we've developed these characters." For the what was the name of that show? The Ullman Show.
Tracy Ullman
Show.
That's an easy show to remember.
She's terrific. But anyway, he said we have these characters called the Simpsons, and we're going to do something different. We're going to do it as a full length show on Fox this year. And I said, well, good luck with it.
Right. Turned out to be a flash in the pan. 25 years later.
Do you find politics inherently funny, or does a cartoonist need to be very clever in order to make it funny?
Both. I think it's funny in and of itself because any situation like politics in which there's so much ambiguity, hypocrisy, lying, and double dealing is really the natural soil for humor to expose that.
But doesn't it require a certain amount of knowledge about what's going on in politics to understand some of these jokes?
Well, I think as much knowledge as was necessary about credit default swaps to make fun of them. I think some knowledge that, for instance, in the financial crisis, I did a cartoon about 15 years ago, and we had another financial crisis, yet another one. I mean, I think the financial crisis we're having now is the greatest one since, last Thursday.
But since 1929.
Oh, I see. But I mean, I did a cartoon where there's an executive on the phone saying, a billion is 1,000 millions. Why wasn't I informed of this? I mean, so much of it is, if you can speed up the Alan Greenspan's voice so it's not so lugubrious over time, you can say, in the end, I think the market perhaps is falling because more people want to sell stocks than buy them. I mean, I think a lot of it, I think real insider knowledge leads to real insider excuses. Mm. So I think you need some knowledge of it. And I think the basic knowledge of the financial crisis is it's gambling.
But a political cartoon on the editorial page of a newspaper is quite different from the sort of thing you do at The New Yorker.
Well, it's very, very different. And incidentally, in the coming cartoon issue, it will be out next week, we have Mike Lukovich, a great editorial cartoonist, and he's got a wonderful spread on what he'll miss about the Bush administration.
But those are things that could have appeared on
those
an editorial page.
Those could have appeared. And I think I would say that one of the big differences is what I call dispositional, which is that in terms of humor of this type where there's a butt of the joke, if someone you like makes a joke about someone you dislike, you're much more likely to think it funny than the reverse. And I think the New Yorker cartoons are more general and insightful of a broader swath of the situation. And I often say they're the editorial cartoons and even great cartoons, and they can be very insightful, are really the cartoons of self-satisfaction. I think the New Yorker cartoons are the cartoons of self-dissatisfaction, not only with the political scene, but how we're involved in it.
But we sometimes do read something very partisan, political, into the cartoons. I might see a cartoon as poking fun at one of the parties, even though it isn't doing that specifically.
Well, I think that's what's interesting about these cartoons, because they give that... in the New Yorker, they give that space for the reader to come and, really give their part of it, or even, riff on it. And some of them, of course, really do poke fun. But I think the fun is a chiding and not a vitriolic fun. There's one cartoon in the slideshow we have here where it's clearly the Bush White House, because they're walking outside the White House and they're saying, the right hand doesn't even know what the right hand is doing. But wonderful thing about that is that's a quote which then can be used not just for the Bush White House, but for every situation that we find ourselves in.
Is there a way to portray cartoon characters so that everybody knows that they're obviously politicians?
I think you put them behind a podium with
you usually with make them a little more burly and without much hair.
With a big audience and with an elect sign behind them, and that's pretty much a dead giveaway. But it is true. Most of the if you look at the New Yorker cartoons, and you will see that most of them would be white portly males.
Mm-hmm. With less hair. And then if they're talking to an aide, the aide is always thin and younger looking.
Right, because the cartoons, like jokes, have these formulaic elements in which we have to immediately size up what is happening and who is what. It's sort of like Commedia dell'arte or any of these forms.
You don't try to publish political cartoons that are mean-spirited. But mean-spirited is funny on the editorial page, isn't it?
It's funny if the person who's being mean to is a person you dislike.
Usually the newspaper's editorial position. If the newspaper slants toward one party or the other, then it's editorial cartoons.
But one of the things about it is they can be great, but they're not that funny. And partly they're not that funny because of the partisanship, because of the bitterness involved. I think to some extent, and it may sound contradictory, a lot of the New Yorker cartoons, you take cartoons by someone like Roz Chast, have this affiliative nature. We see ourselves in the cartoons. And when we don't see ourselves at all in the cartoon, it is a type of mocking, and it is a type of harshness. But I don't think the laughter is as full-bodied.
Well, there's one cartoon, just happened to pull it out of the pile, yeah, of the ones that you had. This man is pleading to St. Peter, wait, those weren't lies, that was spin.
Right, right. There's enough spin in all campaigns to make you dizzy and nauseous. I think one of the things, if I were to say that I find interesting about the campaigns, interesting in my, you're going to say, well, who are you going to vote for? And I am going to vote for Barack Obama. Why? Because I like him better. That's actually why. Then I will find all the opinions marshaled to that.
And the same thing.
And the same thing
McCain
with McCain. You
start off with your inclination, and then you look for excuses to support that candidate and reject the other candidate.
And you know absolutely that, let's say, with the whole Sarah Palin flap about her wardrobe. And incidentally, Lenny, your wardrobe is magnificent. I can see a lot of the fundraising is going into that. The Ferragamo suits, the ties. And really, because you've got to be in a lot of different places, you've got to look good.
And have gold chains underneath my shirt.
And your relatives, too, as well as the dog. So if that was reversed and it was Joe Biden somehow or Hillary Clinton now who was running for president, and it turned out that the Democratic National Committee had spent a lot of money, just the arguments would have just been flipped.
My guest is Robert Mankoff, who's the editorial. What is the official title?
Prince. I thought I liked to be my Prince.
Is it
of cartoon
just editorial editor?
I'm not an editorial editor.
I'm a cartoon editor. Oh, forgive me. I misspeak.
No, that's okay.
I've been known to misspeak than once. You can always correct. You can just erase something.
Now, does anybody know who the lieutenant governor of Alaska is? Because really, this is important. That's an important state. If Sarah Palin ends up being vice president,
our relations with Russia.
Right now, he's looking at Russia.
Now, you are really pretty much the whole history of New Yorker cartoons. I've spoken to you about them in the past. I guess you've looked at every one more than once. Are you seeing something different during this election cycle than you have in previous ones?
Well, I do think, and I think this started with Tina Brown and also certainly David Remnick now, is that the New Yorker, when I started at the New Yorker as a cartoonist in 1977, it was certainly political, but much more isolated. And I think the New Yorker is really much more contemporary now, and especially on its covers, it really partakes of the political dialogue and gets into the rough and tumble of it.
Well, Barry Blitz New Yorker cover of Barack Obama dressed as an Islamic terrorist and Michelle Obama dressed.
I was wondering how long it would take for that cover to come up, but I'm happy it did.
If I started off with it, then you...
It's like Barack Obama saying, I'm happy, bro, you brought up that Bill Ayers question.
Well, you know, does that qualify as a cartoon?
I think it definitely qualifies as an editorial cartoon. The subtlety and ambiguity, which was lost on many people, but
what about you? Did you find it funny?
I don't think it was meant to be funny. I think it was meant to make a point, and I think it did make that point to the people it made the point to, and we know what point it made to the other people.
Yeah. Did you understand why people, many perceived it as not being very funny?
I did understand that because I don't think it was generally realized how many people would see it who didn't understand the New Yorker stance, and that the incongruity here, which made the joke, was that clearly the New Yorker couldn't believe this thing, so it was a type of satire, and that's what I think that's what wasn't realized.
Yeah, it was very subtle. Well, what happens with subtle cartoons? I'm not talking about that one.
Can we talk about my energy plan?
But there are, I'm sure you get a fair number of letters every week. I didn't get that cartoon. There were some cartoons that I just don't get, either too subtle or not funny.
In the upcoming cartoon issue, we're having a spread called I Don't Get It, which we run periodically. I think at one point we snotily called it the New Yorker Cartoon IQ Test, which is cartoons that people have written in, which they, you know, didn't understand. And I think that's sort of a tribute, actually, to how we go about selecting the cartoons, where the cartoons are submitted to me, maybe 1,000 a week. I take in 30 and 40 to David Remnick. David makes the ultimate decision. We talk about it. But we don't focus group it. We don't try to make sure that everybody understands every cartoon. And I think it's sort of interesting that some cartoons, it's clearly, as you'll see in this spread, are bad. And the others, it's yours.
Well, and if they're bad and they made it into the magazine, that means that others were really bad. I mean, you deal with the best cartoonists in America.
And others were really great. Well,
I mean, do you feel that you always pick the best ones?
I don't think there
in
would
retrospect.
Be. Let me go to like Greenspan talk. I think it is beyond human comprehension or even understanding to expect the infallibility of which you speak. So, yeah, no, of course not. There'd be no way even to say that because for any individual or group of individuals, they will differ on this. So it's like saying, what's the best tasting food? What's the funniest cartoon? I don't think it makes sense.
The only reason I ask is recently in another area, I was praising a story by Alice Munro that I'd read in Harper's. And somebody said, well, it couldn't have been all that good because the New Yorker would have passed on it. And I thought...
Well, look.
Well, I thought it was a good story. Maybe Alice Munro doesn't write a bad story.
Well, you know, one of the things that I'm sort of involved in is this program out at the University of Michigan where we do some experiments with cartoons and humor. And when a group of people see a cartoon, there tends to be a consensus. But if you ask people separately, you sort of get a whole normal distribution. The cartoons that most people like, there'll always be a subsection that people don't like. So I think this pretty much translates to everything in life.
I mean, every cartoon here, there was somebody who didn't like these cartoons?
I'm sure there'd be someone who didn't like it. If you asked 1,000 people to rate them on a scale from 1 to 10, you would find the distribution, which even the best cartoons, which were mainly rated, let's say, between 7 and 10, some people would rate them as a 1.
Well, for example, you have two aides off on the side of a stage watching a politician delivering a speech, and one says, good God, he's giving the white-collar voter speech to the blue-collars. I can't imagine anybody objecting to that. That is
please,
something.
Please, all the WNYC listeners, would
that's just
some
funny.
One person call in and object. Just, you know, be on my side here. Because if you are, I just want to say, Lenny said, I can't do any fundraising, but, you know, we have the caption contest. So if you give $250,000 in addition to the subscription, you win the contest.
Oh, you mean next week you can win?
Absolutely.
That's great. Another cartoon that yours, in fact.
Yeah.
Look. These three people are sitting around on a desk. in the office of Apollo Metrics Incorporated.
Right.
And one says, look, we've got to improve our voter tracking algorithms if we want to make more accurate wild-ass guesses.
Right.
How could anybody not find that funny?
I'm sure my immediate family would be among the ones. No, I think most people would find it funny. That's why we're in, but there would be a range.
Robert Mankoff is my guest, and we're talking about cartoons, especially in the political season. We'll find out whether you can make jokes about the current crisis, the economic crisis. It's just ruining so many people's lives, but we'll find out in a little while. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. Robert Mankoff is here. He's the cartoon editor of The New Yorker, and we're talking about political cartoons and, I guess, cartoons that have to do with what's going on in the world. Some of these cartoons that he has recommended, which you can see, by the way, on our show page at WNYC.org, are timeless. Others really do seem to be very specific to what's going on today. One of the ones that I particularly love is something that has come up many times in discussions on our show. We have a politician at a lectern saying, today I'm announcing I've decided to get out of my family so I can devote more time to politics. I just love that. How many politicians have made that lame claim that they were getting out of politics to spend more time with their families when, in fact, they were getting out because there was some scandal that they had to deal with or they knew that they were going to lose the next election?
That's the type of question that answers itself, isn't it? But I think, yeah, or they would say, I want to get out of leaving politics, spend more time with my family, and if I don't happen to have a family, that's what I'm going to go and get. Yeah, I mean, it's transparent, I think, and one of the things is when you sort of sometimes cartoons just simply say the truth. In there's a Alex Gregory cartoon where there's a politician at a podium. I don't think it's actually among this bunch, and he's saying, thank you for that pre-screen question, but before I give you my stock answer, I'd like to disarm everyone with a carefully rehearsed joke.
No, you did include it.
Oh, did include it. And I think that's, really the when we watch these debates, we're in this very, very serious mode, which is almost a type of tunnel vision, which disables us from seeing the obvious absurdity of what's going on. And I think that's what humor does. It points out the ongoing absurdities and incongruities.
Like these two people who are in Congress, obviously, because we see all these symbols of Washington, and one saying to the other, you can't legislate morality, thank heaven.
Yeah, and it turns out you can't legislate intelligence either.
The New Yorker cartoons are often even more political than the cartoons inside. What's the process of selecting those covers? Are they submitted or are they assigned to regular contributors?
Well, I don't have anything to do with the covers. That is our brilliant cover editor, Françoise Moulet, who
Art Spiegelman's wife,
who's brought a whole generation of fantastic graphic artists with very strong political sensibilities.
Although many of them are the same people you use.
Not too much, not so much for the cartoons, mm-hmm. Not really. There's not that much. I don't think there's that much overlap. But the and I think the covers, courageous, and they're courageous in their ability to stir controversy, and even their in the chance they take in not working.
Well, one of the big differences is that you have captions, and the covers have to get the message across totally graphically.
Yeah, I think that's true, and I think that the sensibilities actually of the two groups of people who do it are different as well. I don't think that while the cartoonists certainly have political leanings, they're not consumed by partisanship. That doesn't mean the people from the covers are, but the covers are clearly more partisan than the cartoons.
One of the cartoons you've selected seems to be more clearly tied to current events than others because it mentions stem cells.
Jack Ziegler cartoon is saying something like, if we could get crude oil from stem cells, then I think they'd go for it. Interestingly, a lot of these cartoons have been done over quite a long period of time, and I think it's a tribute to them that they remain topical.
Could you just go back to 2004 and run many of the cartoons again if people hadn't seen them?
A lot of these cartoons are from 2004.
Are they really?
Absolutely. They're not or from that era. Now, we have a whole new bunch of cartoons in the cartoon issue. We had a whole new bunch of cartoons in an issue 2 weeks ago about the financial crisis, but many cartoons that we had run previously about the financial crisis work perfectly now. One of them, actually, that I did was a guy at a bank saying, you could get a loan from another bank if there were other banks. and that was done a while ago. And another one is...
And now it's so appropriate.
And another one is a guy saying, I'd like a hedge against my hedge funds. I think that's what distinguishes the New Yorker cartoons.
Well, it is always difficult to find something funny in a tragic situation like this financial crisis.
Well, I think it's actually
some people have lost thousands and thousands of dollars in their homes.
I think it's easy to find something funny in it because the one of the things humor does is it distinguishes between real tragedy. If you've actually lost your home, you're not going to find anything about foreclosure. But humor does give us that emotional distance and enables us to... One of the functions of humor is not just comic relief, but coping with situations. And if we can laugh at that situations, I think we can cope with it and really think about it better.
Would you like to take some calls from listeners?
Sure, absolutely.
Because our listeners, I'm sure, have their own ideas about political
They always
cartoons
do.
And New Yorker cartoons. Our number here is 212-433-9692. That's 212-433-WNYC. One of my staff wonders if being a cartoon editor has affected your work as a cartoonist.
Well, I think it does. I think I'm more selective in my own work. When I started cartooning for the New Yorker, I did about 35 cartoons a week.
Somebody else was going to make the decision as to whether it's funny or not.
But at that time also I realized in retrospect I was doing other people's cartoons as well as my own, not plagiarizing but really using their sort of comic tropes. And for me it more points to what I think is unique about what I do, which is I try to, at this point in my career, do cartoons that I'm that represent my feelings, my ideas, not just simply comic tropes, not just simply the manipulation of the standard forms.
So if I were to go through some of the more personal ones, I probably would understand what's going on in your personal life.
In fact, when I go to my shrink, that's all I do. I just give her the cartoons. She's fine. She's a fine session over.
She says, I'm so sorry that happened last week.
Yeah. I think that would be true, but it wouldn't be as good as tapping my phone, but it'd be all right.
Well, if cartoonists have very specific ideas about politics, how do you keep that out, that partisan side out of your work? Or do you think that we are seeing more partisan cartoons?
I think the magazine and the overall, the editors of the magazine, David Remnick, the magazine and the cartoons are informed by his sensibility also. And I think it's his overall choice to have the cartoons not be starkly partisan, partly because, frankly, when they're starkly partisan, they're not very funny. They may make a point, and they may make a point to partisans, but they also don't have this longer shelf life that these other cartoons you speak about do.
Well, you do have one cartoon. A man is on the phone in Washington, and he says, I don't think you can distance yourself from the White House on this one. After all, you are the president.
Right, and
that's a partisan joke.
It was done during the Clinton administration.
Oh, really?
Yes. So there. That sort of proves
my
point.
Now you see, I read something totally different into that.
Right, but it's a general point. Anybody in the White House at some point is going to try to distance themselves from the White House, even though they are the White House.
And people running for office who are connected to the White House will try to distance themselves from the White House.
Right.
We saw that with Al Gore. We're seeing that with John McCain today.
distance, I think, is sort of an understatement.
Yeah, well, we go now to Harold from Jersey City. Hi, Harold. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
The funniest banking cartoon I ever saw in the New Yorker was many years ago. It was a picture of a banker at a big desk with a big sign behind them that said loans, and a customer sitting there saying, "Oh, thank you, thank you. I don't know how I'll ever repay you."
I think a lot of the subprime people are saying that. One of the things about when I was starting as a cartoonist, the question you constantly got was, a cartoonist, can you make a living at that? And I did a cartoon a couple of weeks ago where it's a woman asking a sort of fat cat guy, a banker, can you make a living at that?
And I thought that was a very funny. But that was really, that was a topical cartoon.
Absolutely, absolutely.
That wouldn't have made any sense 2 years ago.
No. You got me there. You finally got me on an absolute topical cartoon.
It
turns out that cartoon was about the Clinton administration. All right.
I just didn't okay. get that. Lee from Mount Kisco, hi, you're on the air.
Well, I have a few questions.
Is this a three-part question?
Pardon?
Is it a three-part question, like
the
politician?
Really.
Okay.
I think up cartoons. I have ideas, but I'm not a cartoonist. I'm not trying to be one. I'm trying to submit my ideas to the New Yorker in the sense that they would make them available to one of the many cartoonists that are working, you know, doing your cartoons. And I've been rather rebuffed. And what my latest
I'm sure I'm the rebuffer.
Well, I'll tell you what my latest one was. I'm not asking anything, by the way. I'm going to give all kinds of releases. The one that I was trying to promote is a real estate office pictured from the outside with a big sign says, buy one, get one free.
That cartoon actually was done in 1976
really?
by Charlie Sawyers, but it happens to be Cadillacs that were during the economic crisis at that time. So, you know, one of the things is all the cartoons that are done by our actual contributors are checked by the library against all the other cartoons that ever ran. The other thing is about people submitting cartoons is we see actually about 1,000 cartoons a week. And they're by the professional, you know, cartoonists. And the people always think absolutely when they have an idea for a cartoon, and I'm not talking about you in particular, it's what I call idea rapture. They usually don't have ideas, and they're absolutely convinced that this cartoon, you know, must be published. But we really don't lack for ideas, and most of the ideas that people think of are ideas that have been done before. But next time I'll try to rebuff you gently.
But let me ask you another sure. question along those lines. Are you more likely to look at a cartoon idea that is accompanied by a picture, by somebody who's actually done the complete thing? Or because in the old days, I know that sometimes artists were then put together with joke writers.
Well,
that doesn't happen.
Well, it doesn't anymore. Happen. It didn't happen all. It really didn't happen very much after the 50s or the 60s. But there were gag writers, and the gag writers would do 50 cartoons on index cards. When William Shawn took over from Harold Ross, he wanted more authenticity, so that it's one voice. Now, I will say this: I think that, you know, my cartoons or someone else's cartoons, maybe you could take a Roz Trask cartoon and say, hey, let's punch this up. Let's get a team of comedy writers to look at each panel and see if we can make the joke a little bigger. And you'd sort of kill the cartoon. You just, because it's the idea, it's Roz's voice. It's the way she's thinking. And really that I think is the idea behind the cartoons now, that when it's Charles Barsotti or Jack Ziegler or previously, you know, William Stive or any of our cartoonists, you're hearing their comic voice. And like I say, they do 10 or 15 cartoons every week.
If this guy wants to be taken seriously, he should probably get together with some illustrator, and they could do a collaboration. I'm sure there are a few of those things happening.
Rare also, but what I will say is it's open. The New Yorker, on Tuesdays, I see anybody who wants to come in, provided they get by security, and really the security's not that great.
Just don't pack any heat, okay?
Right.
And then you just go to the New Yorker.
Right.
Thank you so much for your call. We go now to Saul from White Plains. By the way, our number here is 212-433-9692. That's 212-433-WNYC. Hi, Saul.
Hi, good afternoon, and great work in the New Yorker with the cartoons. Just a very quick question. Do you ever proactively consider working with leading and well-known cartoonists in other countries in the English-speaking world? I'm thinking of the UK, Australia, South Africa. In particular, because of my family, I have a lot of focus on South Africa. There's a very hot cartoonist there now named Jonathan Shapiro, who writes under the name Zapiro, and he's been lambasting the changes in the government there. And obviously, some of the cartoons overseas would not be appropriate here based on the knowledge set of readers here, but many of them are covering big international issues, as well as there might be an opportunity to bring that foreign satirist perspective to what's going on in the United States.
Let me add to that. It seems to me, because I used to live in England, that the kinds of cartoons that English publications print are a lot harder, a lot more nasty in some cases than I would expect at the New Yorker. So is that a philosophical thing?
We do get submissions. Often just the sensibility is a little bit off, and it could be in the language, and it could be in the rhythms of the speech. And we have printed cartoons from English cartoonists in the past, and there's really a difference in sensibility. Sort of like humor, like politics, tends to be local. Really, and it's almost the sound of the voice and the way the sentences are written that they just don't quite work. But I'm always open, and we're always looking at things.
Okay.
Thank you.
It seems to me, from my experience in England, that most people tell jokes like, blah, 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 isn't it?
Right, right.
And you're supposed to understand that that was a joke. Now, if you're British and you think that I'm being unfair, write to Robert Mankoff at the New Yorker. We have Shoshana from Brooklyn on the line. Hi, Shoshana.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Hi.
I wanted to express my appreciation for this week's cover, which has really given me a significant amount of enjoyment.
He says he is not responsible for the covers, but it was an amusing cover.
It was wonderful. And what the hell? I'll take appreciation. I'll pass it on to Francoise.
What I wanted to say, and I think that this week's cover is a great example, whether it's your fault or not, I wanted to say that what I love about the covers often is that the longer you look, the more you find. And when I first took this cover out of my mailbox, it just gave me a big personal laugh. At first, my husband didn't find it so funny. And then when we looked at it together and just sort of looked at the subtlety in all the relationships and how all the pieces come together with the four candidates attacking each other, it really gets funnier the more you look at it. And I've been carrying it around in my bag and showing it to people and really having interesting conversations about who is on the defensive and who's backing up whom, and the fact that Sarah Palin is on the biting Barack Obama's leg. All of the pieces are, to me, just very clever.
And you I made it come alive for all our radio listeners.
Yeah.
But, you know, I want to say also that some of the covers, and Francois probably would not want me to say that, has a Where's Waldo in them.
Mm-hmm.
Where's Waldo, that little, that
sure,
little character
little guy,
in the children's
right.
book? You can find him there also.
Really?
No, the covers are great.
Thank you so much for your call. People are now submitting captions. I forgot to mention that before when that caller called in, because you have that cartoon caption contest in the back of the book. And when did you come up with that idea?
Originally, we started it, I think, in the 1998 cartoon issue. Then David Remnick asked if we could do it every week, which I think was a brilliant idea. He wanted something.
It's the first thing I turned to.
Yeah, and we've had over 1 million entries. We actually now, I really should say this, we have the New Yorker Cartoon Caption Contest book, which has 100 of the contest, some really interesting information about the contest, interviews with the winners, and breakdown of the votes. And it also has an accompanying website in which you can look at all the millions of the captions on the New Yorker store.com, cartoonbag.com.
Are you seeing more political cartoons, more captions from the listeners during the election cycle?
Well, if there is a political image, you certainly get that, and really, even if there isn't as well, the viewers will also combine the caption contest with the events that are going on.
A listener wonders whether you worry about whether a cartoon will translate well for a national audience. For example, you recently had one that showed a man leaning against a stripper pole. And the stripper says, "Do you mind? But people who don't ride the subway would it not have gotten that joke?"
We assume our readership does not actually have to ride the subway to understand about subways. The readership of the New Yorker, which about a million people, are very, really, very well informed about all forms of public transportation and also stripping.
Well, and with that in mind, we thank you so much for being with us today, Robert Mankoff.
It's always
been a lot of
pleasure.
And again, you can see the cartoons, some of the cartoons that we have discussed and some others we didn't even get to discussing but are also very funny, on our website at WNYC.org. And this is a selection from how many years?
I think it goes back about 10 years.
Really?
Yeah.
And I wouldn't have known which were which.
Right.
Well, I guess that's what makes them funny.